This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Fall is upon us, and the month of September had some great releases, from Destiny 2 all the way to Pokken Tournament DX and a bunch of others. Joining me to review these titles and speak about the upcoming releases in October is review and previews editor at EGMNow.net, Ray Carcillo. Thanks for joining me, Ray.
Thanks for having me, Mason. I appreciate it.
You know, Destiny came out already, but what did you think about the game?
I had a lot of trepidation going into Destiny 2 because I wasn't a huge fan of the first one. I was one of those guys that hit the original level 20 level cap, was kind of disappointed, and then never went back to it, even though I know that they ended up making a lot of fixes in the Taken King and a lot of the DLC. And I will say that Destiny 2 is better than the first Destiny. It's a lot more polished. It's a lot more coherent in terms of its storytelling. But I still would say that if you're somebody who has been looking at, you know, really thinking of Destiny as this leaps and bounds, you know, step forward for the franchise, it really doesn't feel like that. It feels more like Destiny 1.5. It feels like they learned from their mistakes. They put out a better product this time, but I also am not sure if it's really worth a full $60 investment when it feels like a really big expansion.
That's kind of true. I agree that it does feel like an expansion, but the story is what really got it for me, because I just finished playing it, or the campaign mode. The music was on point. Everything just was so wonderful in comparison to the first Destiny. And I'm really looking forward to the DLCs for this game. But I think it's because I am a fan of Destiny. And I'm not normally into first-person shooters. And I think with Destiny, it has such a forgiving aim sight because I shouldn't be getting headshots, and I am. If this was any other first-person shooter, it wouldn't be very good.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's also partially, I mean, Bungie knows how to make a first-person shooter that kind of can appeal to everybody. What system are you playing on, by the way, out of curiosity?
PlayStation 4, I'm biased. I have an Xbox, but I don't play it as often as I should.
You know, I think a lot of people, just because of that initial push and because of all the DLC that's coming first or exclusively, I think a lot of folks went PlayStation 4 with Destiny, even the first one. I know I myself, I'm kind of split between my two consoles, but I play Destiny 2. I play it on PlayStation 4.
You know, it depends on the game for me. Like when it comes to a fighting game, I prefer it on the PS4. If it comes to role playing, I prefer it on Xbox, and it's because of the controller. I don't know why.
Like,
third-person shooter, I think, fits better with the controller for Xbox than PlayStation 4. So,
no, very interesting. Yeah, I actually prefer my fighting games on Xbox. Actually,
really?
Because of the old school D-pad down at the bottom. So, that's kind of how I personally, when it comes to console fighting games, I usually go. So that's interesting that you would prefer it on PS4. Not to say there's anything wrong with fighting games on PS4. I've played plenty of fighting games on PS4. I just prefer on Xbox One when given a choice.
Yeah. I actually have a couple of controllers. Well, it's one for the PS3. It's called a Hitbox. And it's instead of having, maybe you've heard of it. Have you or no?
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Oh, I absolutely love it. And it has, instead of like the D-pad or a joystick, it's four little buttons. And you just kind of plinking, like you're playing the piano. And I really enjoy playing it on that. I actually can get weird combos in that I normally wouldn't be able to on a controller or a joystick. And speaking of weird combos, Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, it came out. What did you think of that game?
You know, I'm not going to lie. I was a little disappointed with some of the decisions they made for this game. You know, I played it, beat it myself, actually put in some good online time over the weekend. Iron Man and Frank West are my mains, which is a weird combo. But, you know what, first off, in terms of its visual design, I think it was it wasn't a great choice with how they went with a lot of the character models. I think they had to go for a slightly more realistic look, and I think that it just—I don't know—I don't want to say ugly, but a lot of the characters don't particularly look very good. particularly for me, Mega Man X I thought looked a little off. I also feel in terms of its combo system, I understand what they were trying to do. They lower the barrier of entry and they've made a lot of combos. There's a very simple auto combo system now, and they've made a lot of the combos easier to get into for people to get right into it. They've also added a beginner's mode for online play. But I think if you're like me and you're used to these ridiculous combos and all this ridiculous work to put in, you kind of feel like there's something missing from the game as a whole. And there is depth to the combat system, don't get me wrong. If you really dig for it, it can be found even, you know, if you start figuring out how to use the stones, the infinity gems to cut, you know, continue combos and trading your partners in and out. But I felt there was just something a little lacking in the combat system. That said, I do appreciate that they went back to two characters instead of three. And I think that the gems are unbalanced. Because I don't know about you, but I found that myself and a lot of folks online really just use the soul gem, because if there's an extra meter now, for those of you who don't know, that when you control one of the six infinity stones, you get a special power when that meter is filled up, and soul actually allows you to revive one of your fallen comrades. So if you're down to your only other comrade, if you're down to one character and you activate the soul gem bar, that person comes back with about 20% health, and you can do some interesting two-on-one combos for a period of time. So I felt that was really unbalanced compared to the powers that are offered from the other five stones. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go with the franchise from here on out, if they decide to continue with the Infinity Gems, if they go back to three characters per team, or if maybe they just go back to a simple two-character team in general. But that Infinity Stone stuff, I felt, really mucked up a lot of things for a lot of people.
What mucked it up for me was they didn't have Sentinel in it. And in Marvel vs. Capcom 3, it was my team was Sentinel, Taskmaster, and Morgan. And not having Sentinel, I was like, I felt kind of betrayed. So I haven't really played the game, but I watched a fighting game tournament recently. It was in the South Cal Regional, and there was a player called Filipino Champ. He won it, and he had Dormammu and, I can't remember his second character. Anyways, he dominated. It doesn't even matter. He dominated the match all the way through, and he deserved the win. But for me, it kind of seemed a little cheap. They made the game look easy for beginners, but for the intermediate and the pro players, they're walking all over people. And I don't know, it's for me, it just doesn't look fun anymore.
Yeah, I will say this. I noticed this online. The game is not very well balanced, at least here at launch. When I was playing, even though, again, I was probably the only person using Iron Man and Frank West, a lot of folks were using Dormammu. A lot of folks were using Ghost Rider. And I've also seen a lot of folks using Zero. And those characters have some of the easiest combos to string together, and also some of the most punishing. So, I mean, there's a few characters that really stand out above and beyond the rest of the roster, which at 30 characters is a very limited roster. And we really think that the game was hurt by the fact that Marvel didn't want any X-Men in this. They're really just trying to use this as another vehicle to push their movie universe. But yeah, I definitely felt that the game was definitely not as balanced as it should have been here at launch, and at some characters, if you learn just a few of these characters, like I said, Zero, Dormammu, Ghost Rider, they're top tier already, and people are already knowing it and learning it, and it just feels very, very unbalanced.
Yeah, it does. I'm hoping as it goes on that maybe they'll balance it better. I know that the developers said that, there's not going to be any, one-touch deaths like there was in MVC3, and it turns out that people who are playing the PC version, they kind of cracked it, and they were able to get two of the same characters. They were able to do one death touch death combos, and a bunch of other stuff. Do you think they shouldn't have claimed that this wasn't going to happen in the game so soon?
Yeah, I mean, they should know better. That at this point, people are so good at cracking code and at figuring out. It's almost like a challenge when somebody. It's almost like a challenge. When you tell somebody our game is unbeatable, our game is uncrackable, our game, there's no one more hit, one hit deaths, there's no more, none of this stuff. You're basically challenging people to go into it and find it. And of course, at this point, there's so many people out there who are so good at this that, like you said, the game's been out for a week now, and people have already figured out ways around this, because it's like when you run your mouth off like Capcom did there, you're basically asking for trouble.
Yeah, it really is. It's like you can't help but to be like, you know, I accept the challenge. We're going to do this. Another fighting game that I was I actually played a little bit of is Pokken Tournament for the Nintendo Switch. Yeah. Isn't this a remake or no? It's
basically a port of the original game from Wii U. Actually, it's a port. It's more of a port actually of the arcade game from Japan of Pokken Tournament because it has that full roster plus one extra character. So it's 21 characters. So the roster is slightly larger. It's pretty much the same Pokken Tournament from what we got for the Wii U. It just now with the ability of the Switch, there's more options for multiplayer. There's more options for, you know, you can play Switch versus Switch. You can play, you don't have to have a tablet. Or you don't have to be holding the Switch now like you did on the Wii U. They've offered a split-screen version for local versus now. They've offered a couple of different looks, actually, for local versus. But I think that's really the big thing is just they've made it more accessible in terms of competition, and they've added a few characters. Otherwise, this is pretty much a straight port.
Okay. One of the biggest developers that I really like is Bethesda. They always come out with some really great games, and they came out with Dishonored, Death of the Outsider. I never actually played Dishonored before. Could you at least get me up to speed exactly what the game is?
So Dishonored, Death of the Outsider, it's actually, it's technically, in a way, it's almost like Dishonored 3. So if you didn't play the first two games, you'll still enjoy this, but you might be a little lost. Because basically what Dishonored, Death of the Outsider is that, so in the first game, you play as this guy named Corvo, and you kind of had you're the queen's bodyguard, but you kind of had a relationship with the queen, and they kind of had an illegitimate daughter together, but you're also, like, being this bodyguard, you're this amazing assassin. And then somebody plans to overthrow the queen. The queen dies, and you kind of become exiled. You become blamed for the death of the queen. You're framed for it. And what ends up happening is you meet this guy called the Outsider. He's kind of like, it's kind of like a deal with the devil. He's not quite the devil, but he's kind of that shady, mystical force. In this steampunk Victorian era world that Dishonored takes place in. And he gives you the ability to choose different powers, and, some of them could kind of help you with stealth, some of them can make you more effective as a killer, lots of teleporting, lots of turning people against each other, a little bit of mind control, a little, Jedi mind trick stuff in there. And he's this mystical force that you really don't know a lot about, but he wants to see you, for his own reasons, take the throne back, put your young daughter on the throne as the queen, and kind of avenge the queen. The second game then basically is about 10 years later, your daughter's grown up, she is a queen now, everybody loves her, she's an Empress Emily, and then you find out that there's somebody else who's been kind of messing around with powers, that where the Outsider got his powers from, and that supposedly there was an aunt of the, there's a sister that nobody knew about that the original queen had. She comes back saying she has a right to the throne, and you get to choose to either play as Corvo again, the assassin, or Empress Emily herself now, who has inherited some of her father's powers. Depending on which way you go, basically Empress Emily gets back on the throne. And this third game now, Death of the Outsider, is basically some of the people who helped you along the way in the first and the second game, they feel that all of this has to start for some reason with the Outsider, with this magical, devilish figure. And so now you take on the roles of people who were helping you in the first couple of games in an attempt to kill this Outsider, to end this magic, to end this outside force that they feel has corrupted their world.
Man, Bethesda can really tell a story, man. And what I really liked about the game, because I did play it for a little bit, but I was lost. It really allowed you to determine your own play style. So if you wanted to go head on into stuff, you could, or you could be sneaky and just, take people out one by one. But like every Bethesda game, I always go the sneaky route, so it doesn't even matter.
You definitely, and also with this one, you get a better ending if you go the sneaky route as well.
Really?
They actually they want you to go stealthy. They want you, and that's actually in all three games. Death of the Outsider is actually the only one where that is downplayed. In the first two games, it's a very, very heavy focus. They're like, you can be as you know, forthcoming and as brutal as you want to be with your attacks, but if you knock people out with sleep darts instead of poison darts, if you knock them out instead of killing them, you'll get a better ending. But the true ending is always the one where you are as sneaky as possible. This third game, they kind of downplayed that a little bit because it felt even more so than they wanted was that the other way was handicapping people. Mm-hmm. Because everybody wanted the best ending, so it was kind of forcing people to play stealthy. And as good as their mechanics are, I don't think Dishonored is the best game in terms of being a pure stealth game. But again, it was your choice. You always had that choice at, you know, being either super, super stealthy or being super, super brutal. And this game can be very, very brutal. I mean, Corvo has a sick blade in the first couple of games where he's cutting people's throats. He's throwing people over banisters and like they're going splat and you can hear them screaming as they fall. It's absolutely fantastic. But, it's definitely, they felt they wanted to get away from that, what they called like the chaos versus, like a chaos meter. They wanted to get away from that, make that less of a hindrance on players in this third game.
Another Bethesda game that's coming out is Wolfenstein 2, and I absolutely loved Wolfenstein 1. That one is just that the storyline. Like, I think I cried at one point. I don't want to ruin it for people because if they haven't played Wolfenstein, they need to go out there and play Wolfenstein. I won't ruin it. And Wolfenstein 2 is coming out. Could you tell me the story about that one?
So Wolfenstein 2 takes place a few years after, actually not even a few years, probably a couple of years, I'm trying to think timeline-wise, about a year we'll say after the events of the first. Because I'm trying to not give away the ending. takes place, there's a big ending, you really don't know what happens to our good old buddy BJ Blazkowicz, but he is okay, and he ends up waking up. And the second game basically takes place back in America. The first game took place in Germany and around that area where you're trying to take the fight to the evil Nazi, to General Death's Head. And this time it's you're back in America, but because the first game was set up where you were in a coma and you were out for like 15 years and the Nazis had won the war. So now this is like a year later, and now you did your job to try and take out Death's Head in Europe. Now you come back to America, an America that has been ruled and conquered by Nazi Germany, and that there are pockets of resistance in certain places, like New Orleans is a heavy place of resistance. That's actually a new level they just unveiled recently. If you can go out and you want to check out the trailer and some gameplay walkthroughs, including one that we did at EGM. But there's the pockets of resistance, but there's also some places like Roswell, New Mexico, that is basically this weird mix of 60s Americana mixed with Nazism, right? Where there's guys goose-stepping in the streets past your all-American diners and drive-thrus and the classic cars that we know from the 60s and that era. And it's a really weird juxtaposition. So now BJ and his, resistance fighters are trying to basically kick the Nazis out of America. And although it's not General Death's Head, an associate of Death's Head, we'll say, who was introduced in the first game, has come back and is leading the Nazis in America, and she's stronger than ever, and she is not happy to see that BJ Blazkowicz is still alive. So there's going to be lots of shooting, lots of shotguns, machine guns, grenade launchers, and all kinds of fun giant robot dogs that breathe fire that you're going to probably have to kill. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and if you love the first one, if you love the insane speed and crazy action of the first game, you're going to get even more of it this time around. They've improved the dual-wielding mechanics. You can mix and match all different kinds of weapons now, even more weapons than before. You can mix and match with the dual-wielding. And like I said, you're going to get a really interesting, a really weird take on 1960s America as if it was conquered by the Nazis.
Man, I can't wait for that game. And another game I can't wait for is the South Park, the Fractured Butthole.
Oh, that's phenomenal. I played a demo of that a couple of weeks ago, and it is absolutely hysterical. I also cannot wait to get my hands on it. It is amazing.
Well, the first one was excellent, and this time around, like I can't wait for what they're going to throw at us because they give a lot of fan service, I think, in South Park games, and I love that for me because it's you start sitting there and you're like, oh my god, I remember this episode. So I'm hoping that will be the same thing with this game.
I can promise you that they've continued that. They've taken the best moments of more recent episodes. They've got the KFC marijuana dispensary that won't allow minors in. They've got things like the member berries from last season.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of little things that I think people are going to really, really enjoy. That's just a couple of little tidbits that I'm going to give you from what I played from my very early in the game demo, where we had to fight priests, rednecks, and raisin girls. So it's absolutely hysterical. If you love South Park, South Park the Fractured Butthole. They've improved their combat system, the new tactical RPG almost with its grid system. It plays really well, and it's really, really well written and really, really funny. And if this is Ubisoft San Francisco's maiden title, basically the newest dev studio for Ubisoft, and they are knocking it out of the park from what I've seen so far.
No, because this is a really great game, and I can't wait for it. When does it come out?
That's October 17th, so it's right around the corner.
Yeah, right. So many games coming out this month. What else is coming out? Did I miss anything?
Oh, well, I mean, there's so much. I mean, we've got Forza 7 right around the corner. We've got Cuphead. We've got, we mentioned Wolfenstein, which is October 27th. Also October 27th, the new Assassin's Creed and the new Mario Odyssey are both coming out the same exact day as Wolfenstein.
Oh, geez, don't make me choose.
Yeah, exactly. It's. You know, it's actually a pretty quiet November, December this year, but it's only because October is so loaded this year in terms of games that are coming out. AAA must-have titles all across the board, every week, nonstop. Dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
With the Super Mario Odyssey, have you had a chance to play that?
I played only a little bit of it, and I haven't played it recently, but it is, I mean, it's the next continuation of the Mario 64, Mario Galaxy, Mario Sunshine, those kinds of 3D platformer versions of the game. The worlds are gorgeous. I played a little bit of New Donk City. The fact that it's kind of its own kingdom was kind of threw me for a loop when I found that out. But there are more than eight worlds. So I'm guessing at least a dozen, probably closer to 15, like those original games, but we don't know for sure. Tons of surprises, all kinds of new themes. And the idea of Mario having to go and with this, you know, this crazy cap that he can use to possess anything in the world, from enemies to dinosaurs to people. It's, you know, it sounds like a crazy new mechanic, and it is, but it's a lot of fun.
Man, it looks like fun. That's another one that I'm going to have to get. Like, you know, you have Assassin's Creed, Wolfenstein 2, you got Super Mario Odyssey. Honestly, I don't know who to give my money to first.
Yeah.
Somebody's getting the money, but which one, right? With Assassin's Creed Origins, for the people who don't know, how far back is this one going?
So this one is going back to BC. We're BCE. It's 49 BCE, which is basically the beginning of the end of the Egyptian Empire. So it's kind of getting towards the end of the line of the pharaohs, and we have never gone this far back in Assassin's Creed before. The earliest would probably be the Crusades with Altair. So for them to go even a millennia before that, it's really an interesting choice. And you know, I've had a chance to play that as well, and that game is looking absolutely gorgeous, especially on the new Xbox One X, and of course on PS4 Pro. It's absolutely looking absolutely phenomenal in terms of visuals. But I can't say much more than that because I'm under embargo.
No.
Yeah, I've seen some things, Mason, recently that I'm not allowed to talk about just yet.
Well, it sounds like you're bursting at the seams.
Definitely be sure to keep an eye out for that stuff.
Well, you know, when it comes to Assassin's Creed, you know, it's going to be a good game. They've rarely have disappointed you. You know, maybe one or two games, but out of the entire series, it's like, okay, it's going to be a good chance. It's going to be a good game.
The only time I was ever really disappointed was Unity, the ones set in the French Revolution. So yeah, I mean, they have a pretty high pedigree when it comes to putting out some really quality open world experiences. And this time around, they've added a lot more RPG elements.
Oh, okay. Wait, is Unity the one with the brother and the sister?
No, that was Syndicate. That was the one set in Industrial Revolution London.
Oh, I'm telling you, man, there's so many, I get them confused after a while.
It's It's easy to do. It happens to all of us.
Well, thanks so much, Ray, for coming on. I really appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me, Mason.
For those listening and interested in finding out more about you, where can they go?
You can go to my Twitter, my Facebook, my Instagram. It's all easy. It's just at Ray Carcillo. In terms of course, if you want to read some of my reviews and see my videos, well, also Ray Carcillo on YouTube, but also EGM Now, EGMNow.com, EGM Now on Twitter, EGM Now on YouTube also. So that's Electronic Gaming Monthly's current form.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MASONVERAPAINE.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.